The Actors Fund's Performing Arts Legacy Project is an initiative to document the work of performing artists aged 62 and over. By digging deeper into the histories and memories of these talents on whom the industry was built, we can appreciate these performers' life review with dignity as they keep on keeping on. And it also allows us to connect, empathize with, and celebrate the act of aging. During the fall of 2016, 10 professional actors between the ages of 67 and 92 were interviewed by 5 younger actors in a series of 30 oral history sessions. I'm Len Carew, one of the actors. I'm here to introduce excerpts of these conversations produced by the Research Center for Arts and Culture. We hope that these stories will give young actors and others a better idea of the realities of a professional career as a performing artist, as well as insights into almost 100 years of performing history. This intergenerational model of positive aging helps to counter negative stereotypes, and we know that the close attention of people across generations brings validation, more confidence, a sense of their place in the world, and satisfaction that their creations and their individuality can last beyond their lifetimes. We hope you enjoy our stories. We have divided the excerpts into 5 different topics. Theme: New York City Theater and the Arts in the 1960s. The Alternatives. Michael Arion and Augusto Machado described the vibrant improvisational art scene in the 1960s, a time when alternatives emerged that showed us that theater could and did happen anywhere.
In the beginning of my second year, I had a great job that I really loved, and I met at my job one day someone who was going to become very significant in my life for what he was able to teach me and bring me to. Most namely, he brought me to La Mama for the first time. And he took me because the world of theater was just beginning to move out of the theaters and into storefronts and into vacant tenements and onto street corners and fire escapes. He brought me to a place called the Old Reliable, which figures very much in the early days of theater. It was Theater Genesis, La Mama, Cafe Chino, the Old Reliable, and a few other places and experiences and situations. And I got to meet people at the Old Reliable. I didn't realize the extraordinary circumstances I had blundered into. I didn't realize that when he took me to La Mama, it was to see the first show that opened in the space they occupy now on East 4th Street. I didn't realize when I met somebody from Theater Genesis and was brought there and put in a show that this was an unknown entity also. It's where a lot of Sam Shepard pieces were shown and done for the first time. Robert Patrick and Billy Hoffman came out of the Old Reliable, and any other name you can name from that period came from one or both La Mama and Cafe Chino. So I saw, without knowing it, I saw the beginning of everything that is now looked back on as the genesis or the beginning of off Broadway and the real avant-garde theater movement and the real experimental theater movement.
Culturally, the stuff we experienced by trial and error and so forth, and with the training of young people, is the goals of the playwright, the composer of the project, is already set. and that it crystallizes and sparkles and shines, and your limitation of rehearsal time of maybe 3 weeks or 3 weeks and a half, and it all comes together. Sort of the training period we went through is something that most people won't even tolerate. Why are we sitting here? We're going to rehearse for a couple months on what? And we don't even know exactly what we're, you know, you're getting in the mood of something, of a project, and you don't, may not have the script yet. But it's the process of creativity, of, no, we just want to hear your voice, you know, move around, and you know, just hang out, and we'll get to know. But not all of our downtown was as loose as the troops I work with. There were intended goals. There's a script, there's casting, a few readings, and then there's a customer and what have you. I know the part I'm talking about sounds so slapdash as how did anyone present anything? But different goals and different people collectively. I mean, Tom O'Horgan's troupe was very experimental, but they did so much work and planted seeds all over Europe. What the Europeans thought, what the Americans were so free. It wasn't studied. It was so casual. They talked to the fourth wall. And culturally, things are precise and done and appreciated. Here in the 60s from the Mama, it was just, okay, what you see is what you get. And it's so refreshing. Oh, they're not wearing costumes. They're wearing their dungarees or what they wore today. And they're just getting up and doing whatever the playwright's intent was. I was thinking of Paul Foster with Tom Paine, and it's about Tom Paine, but the freedom of speech and so forth. In Europe, it was just like, oh, this is an American hero, and it's about freedom of speech. And it was just so refreshing. It's like, they're talking to you in whatever venue, not a stately theater with a big proscenium arch, but alternative space is like, this is the essence of theater. It's us and the audience, even if there's only three.
Theme: learning to act and creating a character. No matter what direction acting takes you, the challenge of creating a character is at the heart of the process. Susan Lehman talks about learning that she was a character actress. Viney Burroughs talks about the richness of creating a character. And Richard Masser describes his two rules for acting.
The older I got, the more I realized I was a character woman and that I could do that well. And that gave me courage, and that gave me also a starting place. So to start with, what I would first of all work on were the lines, always the lines. And I would also help myself to understand the stuff that was behind what the lines meant. Learning to act was a journey from the Fort Wayne, Indiana Community Theater to this last play I just did for a transport group, the I Remember Mama. You never stop learning, and you never stop figuring out what to do. And then the most important thing is you have to let it go. You have to let it go. You just have to be in it. And doing musicals, it isn't like that so much. But ultimately, it is. Ultimately, it is. It's being. It's just the simple thing that we are doing right now, looking at each other, talking to each other, working to just simply be in the same room as you would be if you were going out the door and you ran into somebody, or the truth of that. Trusting the truth of just being.
You have the voice of the character and you have the body. That you have to establish. That you, and you're constantly working on it. But in the beginning, You begin to, oh, I used to, I remember when I was in that play with Eartha Kitt, and it was in the South, I used to go to the bus terminal on 42nd Street and just sit and watch black people coming off the bus from the South. How did they walk? Because you walk differently on pavement than you do on ground, you know? So the research, knowing the character, knowing everything about the character, and nothing is incidental and nothing is trivial. It all goes into the enormous job of creating a live human being who eats a certain way, who looks a certain way, who wears different... I used to say I know the underwear that my character wears, you know, cotton or silk or satin or bloomers or bikini or thong, you know, that it's all different, it's all part of it, because your inspiration, if you're grounded, comes from the earth. It comes right up, and into the cavity and the voice. And of course, the head and the soul. And then again, you go different places, you go to museums, you see what other artists have done. I swear by Martha Graham, I have her books up there. I often go and pull it down and read what she says about character. You get inspiration from other art forms. You know? We have to think in terms of composition when we think of a, you know, we have to think in terms of brush strokes. Is it a light stroke? Is it a heavy stroke? But I go back again to the importance of knowing the character, living with the character. The more you work, and that's wonderful when you have in a repertory company or when you have a long run, you have always the chance to refine what you do. And you don't change, you just make it cleaner. You get rid of gestures or impulses that are extraneous. You cut away everything that is furbelows or trimmings, and you get this true straight line. Because, oh, it's just so fantastic to be a human being.
So for several months, I taught this class. It was great. It's very good for me, and it was great for them. And I kept saying, I don't have any rules. I don't know anything is true. And then this amazing thing kind of happened along the way where I came up with two rules. And they're the only two rules I believe there are in this, in terms of this work. I also, by the way, just parenthetically, I had people could come in with scenes that they had worked on, scenes they were reading cold, auditions they were going up for if they wanted to work on those, or anything else they felt like doing. And whatever it was, we'd all watch, and then nobody participated but me. I would just say, okay, well, let's go back. Let's talk about it. What are you going after here? And what's, and you know, why are you limping? And the guy would say, I don't know, I just thought it would be interesting. And this was rule number one. If something is well written, if it's not in the text, it's not on the page, it probably doesn't belong in your performance. Don't stick stuff on top of the character that isn't called for if it's well written. Now, if you're going to do an episode of, you know, Starsky and Hutch, bring whatever toys you want and try and be as weird and wild and wonderful as you can be based on, you know, what they'll let you do. But if it's a good piece and it's well written, give some credit to the fact that they know who the guy is. And then you have to discover your version of that guy, not create a new guy who limps and drools and, you know, has his finger in his ear all the time. That doesn't make sense. So that was one rule. And the other rule that I came up with, which I was particularly excited about, was the thing that makes you most uncomfortable, that you want to gloss over or change, you know, where you just don't want to say the line, or it just makes you, that may be the key to the character. And if it's well written, again, if it's well written, and here's what I mean. if you take a, you know, a connect the dots thing, so you have all these dots and they're numbered and you're supposed to connect them in a certain order. And then there are a couple of dots that are up here and they don't make sense with the picture that you've decided is this is turning into. And you just go, no, I'm going to ignore this. You may not realize that the guy has horns or pointy ears or antlers or whatever, you know, there may be, or a beard. You may be cutting out, obviously this is all metaphorical, but you may be cutting out an essential element of who the character is because you decide, oh, this doesn't fit with my picture. Adjust your picture to what's actually there.
Theme: profound professional moments and stardom. There are moments in one's career that have a profound impact on the sensibility and direction of the rest of one's professional life. Len Carreyrou, that's me, talks about playing King Lear at the age of 35. And André de Shields shares his views on illuminating the work and stardom.
Lear, I've done twice. I wouldn't mind having another go at it, as tough as it is. But that's the challenge. Now I'm at least close to his age. They're just wonderful roles. They're just incredible pieces of writing. You know, I did it the first time when I was 35 at the Guthrie. And it changed my life, really. Because, of course, you think, well, I don't think I can play this. But Michael Langham said to me, oh, well, he said, sure you can. I said, what about senior members of our company when you're gonna play King Lear and I'm gonna play King Lear? What do you think they're gonna say? And he said, well, I know them pretty well and they'll go, oh, thank God they didn't ask me to do it. He said, because it's a bear of a role. It's a very, very difficult role. And, you know, he said, you physically can handle it. And he said, I don't think the other two guys could, you know, because it's the man's in full rage after his kids dump him and he goes mad. And, of course, it was true. But it just makes you, when you're playing these roles, it just redefines you in a way. Because, you know, you have your doubts about whether you can do it or not. And if you have people who believe in you, as I did, you think, well, I'm doing it, so I'm out here, so I better give it my best shot. And you think I've got the guns to do it, okay, then let's make sure I do. So I had the guns all right to do it. But it was something that was... I was very conscious of being 35 years old and trying to play 80. These are great weapons. These are, you know, your hands are enormously evocative. And I had 35-year-old hands. And I said to the designer, whose name was Desmond Healy, who had designed the costumes, I said, you know, these hands, I said, they just, every time I look at them, I go, you know, these are 35-year-old hands. I can't hide them. And he said, well, I'll paint them for you. So he painted age into my hands. And I said, well, that's great. But, you know, what am I going to do tomorrow? I said, I can't do this. He said, well, I'll do it a few times, and you watch. He said, you'll be able to do it. I'll show you how. And it worked. It took that thing off my back. I didn't have these 35-year-old hands anymore. And this man, Mr. Healy, used to come in and paint my hands before we were in rep. He would come in, and he was resident in the company as, you know, resident designer, and he would come to my dressing room and paint my hands.
Stardom, it's a roll of the dice. To be totally truthful and philosophical, the light that emanates from a star is interior. That's also true of this game that we play called theater or entertainment. It is our light that we bring that illuminates the work that we do. After that, there is this tradition of
luck is part of it. Being in the right place at the right time, or being in the right place at the wrong time, because that also is a source of notoriety. I think I said to you in one of our conversations that this industry guarantees only two things, and they're not fame and fortune. They're rejection and insecurity. Stardom isn't guaranteed to anyone, and in many cases, it's not really fit for the person who becomes the star. That's all a part of the business of performance art. And you never really can call it, because it has so much to do with the body politic of the society in which you are making your way as a performing artist.
Theme: aging, motivation, discrimination. The Performing Arts Legacy Project looks across the lifespan where issues of aging, motivation, and discrimination affect one's life and one's career. Gilda Miros talks about how aging brings liberation. Virginia Wing talks about some of the challenges of discrimination.
You know, aging liberates us, because aging, you don't have to worry about, oh my God, my wrinkles are showing today. Will he look at me? He won't look at me. Will he ask me how? Will he call me? You can flirt, nobody cares. I mean, you are liberated. You are you. I have my gray hair. I'm proud of it. This guy says to me, why don't you dye your hair? I said, why should I dye my hair? I've had all the colors. I was a model. I was an actress. I had it short, long, blonde, red, all the colors. I look good. I try to be sexy. I was sexy. I was provocative. I did all those things. Now it's me. I'm gray. I'm my age. I know who I am, what I am. And I've lived it fully. And amen to that. So I carry my gray with pride. And that's a liberation. All those things I've learned in life, which I didn't know. So you make mistakes. I wish I had not divorced twice. Who wants a divorce? It's traumatic. When I was a young woman, women were limited. What do you become, a secretary? Or you get married? Or at 50s, a lot of inhibitions. Now you have choices. And then women say, well, look, you gotta, you're 22, you haven't gotten married, you gotta get married. I mean, you're getting older. Oh, you're 23, you gotta have children. I mean, otherwise, no more. In other words, there's more avenues. And for performers also, you know. Now, I was asking my son, how did actors, you know, submit their work now for casting? Well, you can have your little reel. Besides the resume, instead of a resume like when I was young or a composer, you submit your reel. It has everything there. What do you want to present? Short. That's it. It's easy. By email. By app. You don't have to walk around like we used to, knocking doors, waiting, taking some of the agents that are a little, you know, they want to get away with murder, but you don't let them. The casting couch. All these things you avoid. The traveling. I had to come into Manhattan, pay my way to Manhattan, stay in Manhattan, to do the rounds and go back to Queens or to the Bronx. You could do this all by digital. You see how easier it got? And I have my show. And maybe I'll give up my show next week or next month because, you know, it's a responsibility. You have to have a new show every 2 weeks. You have to create a new show. And you know how hard that is. But otherwise, I'm content.
I've had younger actors or middle people in the middle of their careers ask me how I hung on so long. I don't really know what to say except that there are good times and bad times, and you just have to roll with the punches. I always thought people who could get out of the business and be happy were very lucky. I was always jealous of those people. It's very hard because I don't think I have wisdom to advise anybody, you know. There are many times when there were TV shows or films about the South, and I would always say, there were a lot of Chinese in those little towns, and only twice did anybody take me seriously and do it. But the message I got was, you don't exist. That there's no such people, and you just don't exist. And that was very hard. And I guess the one thing I would say is you do exist, whoever you are and wherever you're from or whatever your difference is. You exist, and don't let anybody tell you you don't exist.
Theme: the future and advice to young actors. George Bartenev, a man who charted his own path starting at age 14 on Broadway and founded several theaters along the way, offers a unique perspective on the future and gives some advice to young actors.
I do see some glimmers of the beginning of a movement that is going to start provoking people to take their own actions. You know, one of the things that I sort of got into when I was in the height of the ecological realization that all the issues, every single one is in the ecological issue, because it's all about respect for other living things and respect for their individuality, their uniqueness, their so on and so forth. And if all the issues are really essentially about respect for the other and caring for the other, then once we realize that, then we begin to realize that something outside ourselves needs our care and attention. It's not just about the next meal and the rent, you know? It's really about getting rid of the fears of others, of other tribes, of the character of other tribes, of annihilation of our own culture, etc., etc., etc. It's all wrong. We're all still focusing on the wrong thing, the thing that's very limited and primitive, which is just the rent. It's not putting the rent down. I mean, it has to be paid, but it's not all that there is. I mean, if you just stop once your rent is being paid, you know, you might as well stop altogether, because the only thing that's going to keep the world healthy is if people get balance, you know, get balance between the different forces that we have always regarded as enemies, you know. I have something else I wanted to say, which is about success. Anything I would like to say to young actors starting out: do it your way. Learn to do it your way. Learn to know what your way is. Learn to use every opportunity to do it your way, and add something new you hadn't done before. Stay young. Don't grow old. Keep the fires burning, the wheels turning, and the heart learning.